Hey everyone, it's Tronster. I'm in the basement for reals. And it is the Basement Game Dev Podcast. I have a variety of people with me. Before I talk about them, let's talk about me. I work at Firaxis Games. I'm a game designer and mostly a programmer. Do some game design. Do some stuff at Geek House Games, something I do on nights and weekends. And with that, I'm going to let everyone speak for themselves in any order they so choose. Go.
All right. My name is Blake Rubichet. I am a content designer at ZeniMax Online Studios.
I'm Chris Clemis. I'm one half of Twofold Secret, a indie development studio here in Baltimore. I do the programming stuff.
I'm Joel Haddock. I'm the other half of Twofold Secret. I do the art side of things.
I'm Brett Dorley, and I make video games.
Very good.
I would like to append, I'm also the former Bioware pie-eating champion.
Yeah. I can't back that up, but
Day One does have the chili cook-off challenge.
Day One does, and Brett and I are both on the board of the Baltimore IGDA. I'm the chair. And Blake, were you chair down in Texas, or were you on the board?
I was for a time a part of the board and the event coordinator at the Austin IGDA.
Okay.
I'm also the co-founder of Game Dev Beer Night down in Austin and also now here in Baltimore.
All right. Very good. We also have lurking in the back there, we've got Gabe, our audio engineer. Blake is doing awesome stuff. Is all good? Our levels are awesome? Yes. Very good. And, you know, we're going to do what we've done in the last few podcasts. We're going to go and talk about a topic, and then we're also going to answer one of the questions that someone a few months ago threw out on Reddit. And, you know, I'm going to mix it up, guys. I'm sorry. I'm going to mix it up. And we're going to go and start with the question from Reddit because I think it could go and give us some insight.
Dang.
And, yeah, so this comes from Shriek. And I'm going to, again, have to ask your help on this. S-H-R-I-E-K. E-K.
Key.
It's a special.
I'm already confused.
E-K. Shriek?
Shriek.
Okay. Shriek. Shriek asks on Reddit, could you talk about how you... okay, the grammar might be not proper, but also you could talk about how you about your daily life. That way, we beginners can somehow relate to our daily life. Some bugs that took days to fix and how you tackled that problem and such and what you did. Did it make you want to smash your monitor or just make you feel like a stupid retard and such? Happy face. So... I mean, what I got out of that is, could you talk a little bit about your daily life, and if any, like, one bug really stood out, and anything that you worked with, could you share that story? So, if a bug doesn't come out, at least your daily life, you know, I like to know, are you an early riser? Are you a late riser? Do you do coffee? Do you do the do?
I enjoy being able to get up and not have to be at work till 10 and go into work with shorts and flip-flops and a t-shirt. And, you know, that's the best part about, you know, the casual atmosphere of making games is awesome. And, you know, at crunch time, I work a lot of hours, and not crunch times, I work normal hours. But yeah. And as for a bug that stands out, so there was this one time, there was this bug that was happening. So at Day One, we have build machines that build the executable with all of the code that's checked in, and then we test it and distribute it to our design and art teams.
Right.
And there was a bug that was happening only on the build machine, in which basically the byte alignment of how it was creating our matrices, which we then casted into the Havoc matrices, was causing a crash in one particular case, and it was very consistent in this one particular case that it happened, and, you know, it was very annoying to track down and having to grab the builds from the build machine instead of being able to build it locally and then debug through the process, essentially attaching to it after, you know, attaching to the executable after it crashed, and then dissecting and figuring out why this was happening. And then we eventually fixed the byte alignment issue with this one setting that was different between the build machines versus our normal builds.
Is a configuration setting?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. was it like a true false or a 1-0-1?
It was like 5 years ago that I fixed this bug. So
I didn't know. It's because this is the worst, where it's like the number one should have been
the number two.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Well, this was a thing where it's like they weren't byte aligned, so
oh jeez,
it was like one started on the 16th bit instead of the 4th bit or whatever, or the 2nd bit or whatever it was.
Wow. All
right. If I can provide something in direct contrast to that, I really like when characters' skeletons explode in funny ways. You guys have probably all had this happen. I don't know if you guys work in 3D at all. But
no. There are no skeletons.
Characters in 3D games, right? They're rigged up with skeletons, and almost, I don't know, once a month on a glorious day, the programmers will do something to completely realign the skeletons in the model, making everything bend over backwards into some sort of freakish, creepy, crawly crab thing.
Uh-huh.
I love those days.
Oh, it happened like early on the XCOM when some of the female soldiers first got in, and you were going through them in the, I don't know what you call it, our barracks area. Their ponytails would like whip around like a whip, and it was kind of ridiculous. So you would have gotten a lot of joy out of seeing that happening. So okay, other guys. So Brett shared at day one. What do you do in your day to day life? You know, I know some of you full time devs, sometimes part time devs. Like what's your daily life like?
Well, I mean, for Chris and I, yeah, we're doing this part time. So you know, personally, I get up in the morning and I have to go to my regular job, and I do that, and that certainly eats up a lot of life right there. and then it's home in the evenings, and then, you know, I'm married, I got a house, got to take care of, somebody's got to mow the lawn, you know, things got to get done. But then it's finding you have to make that time. You have to make sure you put in that time to sit down and work on the games, because it's easy to say like, I'll just make that tile set, you know, tomorrow, and then tomorrow turns into the next day, and then the next day. So if you don't really buckle down and say, you know what, all right, I'm not going to watch Game of Thrones tonight. I'm going to sit down, and I'm a night person, so that fortunately makes it a little easier. You know, it's okay to stay up later. I don't need that much sleep, but you do have to, and it's also, you know, with a regular job that, as I said, that can start to weigh on you, especially when you have stress from that, and you're like, I'm going to job part two, but
right.
You know, I try to avoid looking at it that way, because it's not a job, it's something I love. So you want to make sure to just put everything else aside, you know, check the rest of the day at the door, sit down at the computer and get started.
Now, the two things that hit home, because we're at the geek house, we're in the basement, and my lawn is looking atrocious. And the reason it looks atrocious is because we're crunching right now on XCOM. And if I wasn't crunching, I would have actually mowed the lawn today. Like, have you ever thought about, I need to just hire someone to do this, or is that not an option? Or
Chonster's offering you a job.
Yes. what's your rate? That's
Well, you know, I'm curious. Like, you know, you pay money for time. You pay someone else to cut your lawn. You get time back, time to work on your games. But like, where does that divide exist?
Well, I think if it were a case where, and this is in the economics, if we were making more off of our games, I could justify that more. But since, you know, originally, you know, we're not quite at that level yet where I can say, okay, this is, I can put out X expenditure here, and I know it's going to result in Y later on. You know, there's still that question mark, but boy, I would love to have someone come and mow my lawn if I didn't have to, didn't have to think about it anymore. But, you know, it's little stuff. You know, like I had to fix the screens this weekend. Somebody's got to do it. You know, it's easy. I put it off for as many months as possible. But
okay, one more. And you can totally say, like, you know, don't have to answer that. But is it, I don't know, like being a night person working on a game and married, like that means you're probably going to bed a lot later than your wife. Like, is that an issue at all, or does that all...
Oh, no, that's always been that way. I've always been the night person, so...
Fair enough. All right.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting. I mean, my experience is much like Joel's, as far as, like, you know, like, especially recently, my day job has been kind of stressful. And the thing that has been sort of amazing to me is that, you know, there was this one day last week where I was like, I just need to, like, turn my brain off after I get home. And the crazy part, and the reason why I think like I may have like a future here in this whole making games thing, is like I turned my brain off for like about an hour maybe, and I was like, you know what I should do? I should go add this one thing to the game. And that's the crazy thing about programming to me, and I'm sure lots of people have this experience, is like I just spend a lot of time thinking really hard, but when I'm done with it, I don't feel like tired out or bad afterwards. Like I feel better than when I started off.
Definitely.
Yeah, and it's this weird, like, it's not quite relaxation in the sense of, like, you're just chilling in the shade, sipping or something like that, some sort of beverage, but it's rewarding, I guess.
Excellent. Yeah, I can remember when I was working on a game in, I think it was in college, it was during the summer, and I just remember one time, it was the very last thing I was thinking of when I was going to bed at night, which was like 3 a.m. in the morning. And then the very first thing I thought of as soon as I woke up in the morning was what I had to do next on the game.
Yeah.
So I can understand that. How about yourself, Blake?
Okay, so I find myself gravitating more and more towards what I was like in college, where I get up really early, like 7:30 to 8:30 generally, and I like to, so I guess 7:30 usually, and I like to get into work around 9. And so I have like an hour to an hour and a half to just do all the little things. I like a nice long runway into the day. That way when I get to work, I'm ready to go. Cause if I wake up 30 minutes before I roll into work, I'm going to be a zombie for the first hour or so of the day.
Right.
And if you're a zombie for the first hour or so, if you get in at like 9 or 10, you might as well burn the entire morning, right? Like you're going to do lunch and then, you know, so like, I like that nice long runway. I get up, walk my dog, go into work. Usually have the same kind of breakfast every day. I work through the morning and then I go to lunch with my coworkers pretty much every day. I'm really tight with my team in ZeniMax and we go to lunch every day and we hang out. Work through the afternoon. We're not in crunch mode right now, gloriously. So I generally go home at 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock. Maybe 2 or 3 days a week, I'll stay later and I'll stay till like 8, you know, something like that. If I'm working on something that I'm really into, when I get home, man, I'm exhausted. Like I leave it all in the field. I have the utmost respect for you guys being able to go and do your job during the day and then come home and be like, I'm going to make games now. Like when I get home, I'm like, sweet Jesus, turn on something that I can just look at. my butt hits the chair and decompress. I'm just like, I can't get up anymore. What's happened? and then I hit the sheets around, you know, midnight, something like that, and rinse and repeat.
Wow, yeah, very good. I can understand too, like when I wake up, I'm worthless and I really need to get caffeine in me, and there's a Starbucks that opened up near Warren Road here in
Hawaii. Oh no.
And if any of you guys are ever up early in the morning, you'll probably go and see me there. That's my office.
Your stalkers have now found a way to find you.
That's where you start.
Well, it's funny because I know a few coworkers like Ramsey's, you know, who used to work at Day One. He now works for Axis. He'll run in there, and you know, we try to learn all the baristas' names. So any names I don't know, he'll know, and we work it out. And also, there's a few other coworkers who will come in and they'll get their coffees and they'll see me there, and I'm like, okay, it's getting near 9. I should probably go into work right now. And unless I'm meeting another friend who used to work at Firaxis, I'll try to get into work around 9 o'clock. And if I haven't had more than 2 cups of coffee, we have a coffee club at work. We have Zeke's do some fresh roasting, send it in. Zeke's Coffee. They're not a sponsor, but you should buy them.
I just had some of that for the first time.
Are you serious?
Yeah. There's a little stand down. What's the road that collides with York that goes out to the highway?
Which highway?
Pagonia, Warren, 675.
Schwann. So if you go down Schwann past the highway out towards the country,
right,
you run into this little place that's like a half and half gas station.
It has a farmer's
market.
Falls Road.
Yep,
Falls Road.
Corner. Right there at Falls and Schwann, there's a little coffee shop in what used to be the gas station there, and they serve Zeke's, and it's really good. And also, if you like fresh fruit and vegetables, that stand is open 7 days a week, and it's really good.
I got to check this place out. You know, I go by there every single Thursday night. I play on a laser tag league, and I have to take that back road to get to Owings Mills.
So, again, none of you listening to this podcast will care about this unless you live in Baltimore. But have you guys been to Jake's, which is out there on Falls Road?
Never heard of
it. It's the best barbecue place I've ever been to.
No.
Ooh.
Andy Nelson.
Yeah. That's fighting words. Andy Nelson.
Andy
Nelson's, there, right?
Andy Nelson's is a pittance compared to Jake.
Oh. I think
he's not from Baltimore.
No.
He doesn't realize he's going to get
I think
shot
Andy
now.
Nelson's is using a recipe that came from Alabama. I know this from...
Heresy.
It's good stuff. We'll you know,
we'll talk about it after. You should go with me to lunch one day.
I
go to Jake's.
We should, you know, and that's the thing too. Like I will go out with different groups. Like I like to try to mix it up whenever I'm going to lunch. And there's never one group, although a lot of us have been playing League of Legends.
Oh yes, I love it.
It's good stuff. Except for Tuesdays. I have, with a few other people, we have Team Fortress Tuesdays at work. And we actually are talking about going against some other studios because, you know, we have our own server. We set it up and it's good. And I don't know. We want to go and get some new people into the mix. Nice. So it could go and be some
sounds
friendly.
We'll talk about this. It's good. To the topic of the day.
Well, I got to say, we'll go there in 1 second. Just want to say this, ZeniMax did kick Breakaway's butt when I was at Breakaway in Team Fortress 2.
Of course we did.
So, but change. But yes, as Blake said, let's talk about the topic of the day. And that is cloning. And another topic that we could probably go hours on. No, not sheep. And hopefully we're not like sheep. But we're talking about cloning game design versus the unique experience. And I know one of the things that stand out to me on this topic was Daniel Cook of Spry Fox. He gave a talk at GDC this last year about how game designers, you know, those of us, any of us who make games, should really be pushing to go and make unique experiences versus just cloning existing games. I wonder, like, what when you think about cloning games, what are your thoughts? Is it just reusing existing game mechanics, or is there really some blatant cloning out there, and what can we do to combat that?
So I think that there is both room for quote-unquote cloning and not, and making new experiences, because there's a lot of old games that I enjoy, like some of the older JRPGs that I grew up on, that they don't necessarily make that many of those anymore, but I still enjoyed those gameplay, and I would love to still have that gameplay, just experience a new story. So in a sense, you know,
that's not really a clone. Well, that's more like an homage or something.
If it's still cloning the gameplay of it, it's just a different line.
Right.
That is essentially a clone because it is cloning of the gameplay, just wrapping it in a different shell.
Okay. Well, what were we talking about here, too? We're talking about Dragon Warrior, Final Fantasy? I mean,
Lunar, some of the Shining Forces, things like that.
So yes. You as a game designer, like, would you want to make one of these games that, like, how closely would a game you make be like one of these games?
I kind of enjoy not making the types of games I really enjoy.
that seems a little weird, I'll be honest.
I like shooters, and that's the majority of games that I make, but I don't love them as much as I love RPGs. And it's good for me because I've stopped playing, I don't play every shooter now. I play a couple shooters now, but it's one of those things where I still have my reprieve of, okay, the new RPG came out, I can play that, and it's different enough from what I'm working on, so I don't kind of get burned out. There are games that I would like to make, but I kind of enjoy making things that I don't necessarily play.
I definitely get this as a designer, right? It to deploy a whole range of vicious cliches, right? You don't necessarily want to know how the sausage is made. When you get very close to something, you lose your ability to stay away from it, right? Your nose gets so close to the grindstone that you lose perspective.
Do you not play RPGs then, since ZeniMax is working on one?
I love RPGs. Mm-hmm. Yes, I play them. But I don't play MMORPGs obsessively, right? Mm-hmm. I don't play World of Warcraft all the time, right? When I was working on Star Wars, I played competition to see what they were doing, to kind of experience what they were doing that was new, but I wasn't all up in them all the time. And I think that that is worthwhile in as much as you don't necessarily want to get burned out.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's delicate, right? Because there's that delicate line between what's homage and what's copying. The classic expression is good artists copy and great artists steal.
Right.
We could even maybe reduce that to bad artists copy, right? If you're doing a shot for shot theft of something, that's bad, right? But what does Quentin Tarantino do? Quentin Tarantino takes movies that no one has ever seen before that he loves, and he just steals from all of them, and he puts them together. Yes. Huh. Almost every Quentin Tarantino film is a collection of tropes, ideas, and shots from other movies that he loves that are like weird little grindhouse films and weird little indie films that other people have never seen before. And in that, there's beautiful originality, right? That's what postmodernism is that ability to be heavily referential.
Right.
And that's something that we're really delicate about. right? Ubisoft is the only company I know that'll be like, it's a me, Mario. Like, they'll make a joke about Mario in one of their games. That's like Assassin's Creed, right? Because they are totally comfortable with being referential. But most companies aren't. We're really delicate about it. You don't see it as much as I think you should.
That's true, because, like, you don't really see a lot of movie makers suing each other. Like, I don't know that, I'm not sure that I can think of anyone who's really sued each other. Whereas, you know, these big corporations are super happy to sue each other. That to me is my first guess as to why that's happening. I mean, to me, I don't see anything.
Even beyond big corporations, I mean, at the indie level, you know, look at the sniping that happens.
Right. Well, that's, that to me is different. It's almost like the smaller the territory, or the smaller the prize, the harsher the fighting almost. But
so I definitely want to understand a little bit more about this in the indie space, because I know it gets real vicious in there.
Right.
And what I see it as is often you'll have one game that comes out that's really original, and then another game has popped out at speed that is something that is a copy of those original ideas. And often because of, like, marketing or some other factor, that that copy can succeed in a way that the original never did.
Right.
Well, succeed, I mean, we're not talking financial either. I mean, well, we could be talking financial.
I think so, yeah.
We'd just be talking gaining audience. I mean, when I was first learning OpenGL, I needed something to do with it. And after I did the demo scene, I'm like, well, I love Zelda. I think it was a great game. And I wrote, I took over the open source Zelda project that Nihi had started, until Nintendo sent a cease and desist. I mean, was it successful? I mean, I made $0 off of it. As soon as we changed the graphics of it and put it on SourceForge, nobody wanted it because it wasn't Zelda anymore. But, you know, it's tricky. But, I mean, there's got to be a place. I mean, for game designers starting off, I mean, where do you start? Do you start with something unique, or don't you start with what you know and then expand upon that? Or
so
that's what artists do in any field, right? Like, I mean, you start by imitating people you like, and eventually through practice and that kind of thing, you eventually develop a voice of your own. Like, that's totally fine. And I don't consider any of that cloning, quote unquote. I mean, the two examples I can think of that kind of the indie world at least encompassed were, well, maybe not so much indie. The first example I could think of was Tiny Tower, I don't even know what to call that.
Oh, yeah.
Social game, super casual thing for iPad and maybe iPhones.
Oh, yeah, I got it on my iPhone.
Yeah, so Zynga cloned that one, like, super close. Like, it was, like, you could overlay the interfaces and just, like, it was, like, pixel for pixel, shot for shot, or whatever.
There were a lot of articles about that.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, I don't know. Tiny Tower was, as far as I know, like, pretty successful in and of itself. But it's like, well, why did Zynga do that? I don't know. The other big one was a game that I'm not sure has been released yet or not. It's called Radical Fishing. And
I think they did finally release it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and I wish I could remember the names of the guys who did it originally. And they were beaten to market by some other group. I think it was a company. And I wish I remembered the details offhand. And they were really upset, like, because that had been sort of like, that had been something they had been really emotionally invested into as an idea. And it was a very original idea. And, you know, this company kind of swoops in and grabs it. And that's really tough, because especially in the indie world, so often you're in it for the love of the game. Not to say that people in, you know, AAA aren't, but that's a huge part of the investment for you. It's just literally like you're emotionally invested in this new idea, and hopefully you're going to succeed and become big and famous and that kind of stuff. But you're in it for, because you love the game idea at the end of the day. And that's really tough to also, I mean, that just is straight up wrong in my book.
And but you want to make a living at it too, right? I mean, like, I'm thinking, you guys, you're doing indie stuff, but, like, wouldn't you love, like, pay, you know, mortgages or whatnot, like, all of it?
Sure.
Doing what you love to
and
do.
And for so many of these indie people, you know, again, we
have
the benefit of doing it part-time, so, you know, if our game bombs, it's not going to ruin our lives financially. But so many of these people are, this is what they do, you know,
they bet everything.
They put, you know, they have their own personal crunch time where they're working, you know, their 16-hour days making nothing. And it's all coming down to whether this game sells for them in the end. And then to have somebody, some other company, you know, come in, get wind of your, you know, the beta you're working on, steal the idea, put it out with some polish, and see them cashing in on it. Because I believe with Radical Fishing, that game actually did, the clone did very well on the iPhone. And so, you know, you're like, well, that could have been us, but someone just came in and, you know, ripped it away from us at the very last second. So, you know, it's right. your child just got carried off, and not only did it get carried off, it got sold.
how did the company get the idea?
This is going to be terrible because we're being factually inaccurate on a podcast, but
an inaccurate podcast? No, the internet is 100%
always true.
Yeah,
that is a personal
I believe they
preset.
Discussed the idea I and actually, had, like, shown off.
Well, I think it might have been good. At the IGF, actually.
Was it the IGF?
I think they might have, I mean, maybe I'm getting it mixed up, but I feel like they put it in some kind of competition. And it hadn't been finished at that point because most stuff at the IGF is in one state or another, not quite done.
Right.
And so I think that's where somebody caught wind of it, I think.
It's a possibility. I mean, you look at the, was it Pong or was it, it might have actually been Pong or Breakout or something. I think, like, we're talking 70s.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Atari versus, like, Nolan Bushnell and the other guys. And, like, they went to a trade show. And Nolan Bushnell had signed the guest book and had saw this
yeah,
Pong
that was
game.
For the original table tennis, which was stolen from Ralph Baer.
Ralph Baer. Yeah. And, you know, and it's like, so it happened in, like, I don't know, the late 60s, 70s, or early 70s.
It's been happening forever, right?
So it's not like it's going to, forever.
I want to say, you know, and this is something that great game designers and great creators have always told me, is that ideas are crap and worth nothing. It's execution that matters.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Yes, it's funny you say that, Brett, and I say that, like, I love people who have enthusiasm, but, like, I will meet with a lot of non-game dev people, like, oh, you're on the IGDA, I got to have coffee with you. I'm like, oh, great, I love having coffee with people. Coffee is key.
I love coffee.
Coffee is good stuff. And, you know, we're sitting down there, and he's like, I remember one person saying, like, I've got this idea, it's a lacrosse game.
Sweet.
Yes. You know, it's a sports game,
it's
lacrosse,
an untapped
market. Thinking... It's not the first time I've heard that, and it's like, execution is everything. The
right.
idea is really nothing at all until you actually have something to go and show for it.
So, like, I feel for these radical fishing guys, like, that must burn, like, so bad to have your, like, great idea stolen. But
right.
their game wasn't even out there in the wild, right? Like, this other company would have had to have seen what they did, kind of gotten a sense for it, and then had to reproduce it completely from a blank slate.
It depends on how done it is. I can't speak to it. I have not played Radical Fishing, but
yeah.
I mean, you know, the same deal. Like, if you you had a great idea, if you
right.
had it out there and someone kind of ripped it from you, wouldn't you want to,
you know what's an interesting thing that a lot of people I know say that have been in the business for a long time? They'll go to a conference and they'll be like, I have this idea. I want you all to steal this idea. Like, Do this and this and this and this. I want giant catfish with laser beams and sharks. It's a great idea. Go do it. That's what they always say. Is like, I have too many things to go work on. This is something I think is cool. Steal the life out of it. Go steal it and take it and run with it.
Yeah. But it's kind of funny.
At the same point, going back to the radical fish thing, you know, it is, because it is so prevalent in the industry, unfortunately, the cloning is... If you are a small indie and you don't want somebody to steal your idea, you almost have to not say anything about it until it's released, because somebody can see it and be like, oh, what are they doing? I mean, there's a lot of NDAs and secrecy in the industry because people don't want any of their ideas shown off until, like, right before the game comes out to build the hype. But if they show it off too far, it gives people... enough time to react and do that in their own game.
Well, let's be honest, too. I mean, I think it's more of just a legal precedent, because execution is everything. Even here in Hunt Valley, I mean, a secret a lot of game devs know is that everyone usually knows what everyone else is working on. I mean, people know
at all times
other people. And it's like, and it's usually not people in the industry which are the issue. I can't say it's a blanket statement, but... I know that when leaks occur, a lot of leaks are usually people who are interviewing or trying to break into the industry, and then they throw stuff out there. I know there was one for the Wii U way back when, and it was, I think, a tester who's like, hey, he tweeted a picture of the Wii U hardware.
The new Wii U controller, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it's not people who've been in the industry for a while. You realize, like, okay, you might hear what someone else is working on, you know what, and even if you're not NDA'd, you just don't say anything about it. But that's a whole nother topic. But to figure out, to touch on that a little bit, you know, you got to be responsible. Let people work out their stuff. And if someone has a great idea, okay, you can hear it, but again, ideas, you know, without execution that much. So we are hit on time. I don't know if you guys have any last thoughts on this topic. Anyone want to share anything at all?
Just so I'm clear on what my stance sounds like, I'm in no way for intellectual theft. I think people should do their own thing, absolutely. But going back to what we said, I think execution is really everything. You know,
right?
You should make a better game than those other people. Like, at the end of the day, that's what matters. Is your game better than theirs? Awesome.
Definitely. All right, that's good. Okay. All right, well, yeah, thank you again for joining us at the Basement Game Dev Podcast, and I hope you tune in next time. This is John Stier saying cheers.